Hey, cool cats and kittens. This is Lead with Levity, Snuggie Edition, and I'm your host, Dr. Heather Walker. If you've spent the last few weeks in your underpants, then you're in good company. This episode is for you. Today, we spotlight a CEO who leads with levity, Mr. Papa Bear himself, Matt Bonnet. Matt runs an up-and-coming customer engagement platform called Bonjouro. He has an unconventional culture that includes full-body bear suits and family-friendly activities. I'm happy to share the story of Bonjouro with you. Stick around. Stay tuned.
It's time for a sneak peek.
I think a culture is one of these things where it's actually really hard to realize how important it is because you have it naturally. We were a very close team. We were all in the same country at the beginning. It was super easy. We then go remote and things go overseas and we try to adapt and we're going to make some mistakes there and we're going to make some muck-ups because it is suddenly a much, much different beast. If you don't enjoy what you do, then it's a waste of a life. You're not going to work to make money so that you can enjoy the rest of your life. Because if you do that, you'll look back in 30 years' time and realize that most of your time has been in that office. So it's all about making the most of your life, enjoying your life, and laughter is the answer to that, I think.
And now, on with the show.
I'm Dr. Heather Walker, and this is Lead with Levity. I help leaders create awesome work environments where communication is light, enjoyable, and uplifting. I shed light on the power of levity at work. Imagine just how much you can get done in that kind of environment. Come explore with me. Welcome to the Lead with Levity podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Heather Walker, and today I am so excited to have a fellow leader here with me today who has been working to create a wonderful work environment, the kind of work environment that employees can get really excited about. And my guest today is Matt Bonnet. And Matt, like I said, is the Papa Bear, and that is his official job title, y'all. So we're going to break that down in a second because I want to know all about what does it mean to be the Papa Bear of Bonjouro. So Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Heather. Great to be here.
All right. So I have to address the elephant or the really big bear in the room. Did you give yourself the title of Papa Bear? How did that come about?
I think it just naturally arose. So we kind of created the brand the same day that we created the company. So we knew we were going to be doing this thing around video. The whole business came as an accidental thing anyway. We kind of built a hack and then it started to turn into a company as these things do. And so we pretty early on said, what should our brand be? I don't even remember how we came up with a bear, but it seemed to work. It was very friendly. It was fun. And then even that, the Papa Bear thing came. I have another company that we ran before this. And in that, it was Head Honcho.
Okay.
And my CTO's official title was Head Computer Person. And so I don't think we ever really took the titles very seriously. And that's probably just part of our culture and kind of a little bit definitive of who we are anyway. Mm-hmm. And then Papa Bear just made perfect sense. And it's stuck ever since.
So can you give me sort of like a 50,000 foot view of your company? What is your business? What do you do?
We have basically a video product, a video like communications tool. So we plug into other softwares like CRMs. And when customers perform certain actions, such as a new lead comes into a funnel or someone purchases from you the first time, we send you a little notification. We say, hey, look, Jane from Ontario in Canada has just signed up. She's purchased XYZ. Why don't you send her a personalized video and just say thank you and ask if she needs help with anything. And so the product gives you a notification. You do a 1 minute video. You mention her name, her company, like it is literally personalized for her. And that video is delivered to her. And we find that the companies that want to do this and take that extra step with personalization receive extremely well. So, you know, they'll get 3 times the average kind of response rate to these messages. People kind of go, hey, that's amazing. You know, you just stopped and said hi to me. And so it's used in lead conversion. It's used in, engaging clients early on and creating advocates. So the whole product is about building relationships with customers and kind of doing the right thing. we are just people who do this anyway. I think the product was almost born from the culture rather than the other way around.
Interesting. So I could totally see that really differentiating you, because I get emails all the time, constantly, all day long from salespeople who are like, and some of them are really pushy emails too, like, hey, I've been trying to get a hold of you. When are we going to meet? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't remember ever contacting you for anything. Who are you? And it's constant, it almost seems. So I can imagine that if I got something in my inbox with a really personalized video that was tailored to me, that it would feel a lot more special than, you know, that standard crabby email that I've been getting lately.
Exactly. We're not so much a cold sales piece. It's kind of a second touch point. We tend to get used when someone's already interacted with a brand. Cold is cold, I think, at the end of the day.
Right.
The one thing is because what we advocate is saying, look, spend 30 seconds doing a video for a client. Like at the cold stage, it might not make sense to put the time in to do that. But obviously at the second touch point, it absolutely makes sense to then make, you know, the best first impression, show them who you are, give them that trust, and that gets repaid at that point.
I have a question for you, and this is slightly off topic, but I've recently gotten really excited about this one app called Close. It's like C-L-O-Z-E, which is sort of a mix between a personal relationship management tool and a customer relationship management tool. And it just kind of takes all the people and touch points and just everything, every time I've interacted with someone, and it lets me know, hey, it's time to reach out. Hey, you haven't talked to this person in a while. It helps me. It's almost like my assistant, you know. How does this compare to something like that?
Yeah, so similarly, we kind of build off the same kind of, I guess, action points. So like you said, hey, you haven't talked in a while, it's time to chat. We tend to do things more around conversion. So those trigger points in our system tend to happen, like say, when new leads come in, when someone's hit a milestone with the company, when someone's just purchased a product and you want to ask them to leave you a review. We actually do plug into platforms like Close. Mm. So we actually work with the Close through its AP plugin. And then really what we do specialize in, of course, is the video as a comms tool. Obviously recording these, giving you all the information about the customer so you can customize the message at that time, delivering it with links in the video so they can go and take a next action or get in touch or reply to you and talk with you. So really it's about using video as a very, very quick way to send messages rather than everyone thinking, well, if I do a video for every customer, it's going to take me 10 minutes each video. This is kind of like a 30-second process. But similar, it's all about, like you say, like the right points on a customer journey that you need to go and engage with them.
Interesting. So you mentioned before that this company was sort of like a happy accident, and the Papa Bear title and all of the branding and everything sort of stems from the culture that you've created. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What does your culture look like?
Yeah, so I'm English originally. I now live in Australia. And I think, for all those who know English people, we definitely probably have comedy at the heart of our country culture. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of drives a lot of what we do. There's definitely, you know, I think friendships and closeness is driven by jokes. And so that's part of our culture straight away, is that we're very lighthearted. We don't take things too seriously. You know, we have always worked in B2B situations. So kind of we sell to other businesses, and contrary to, I guess, the standard norm, we like to strip back the whole business persona and just say, look, at the end of the day, it's a bunch of real people like you and me. And so,
right. You know, and you buy from the person, not the brand.
You buy from the person, yeah. And obviously, if the brand's done its job correctly, then you're hiring people who fit that culture. And so the people that people buy from, they are your brand. Like the people are your brand. Your brand's not the logo. It's not the, you know, the font or the tagline. More than anything else, it's the people you hire. You know, great brands and great cultures, you can spot the people. Like everyone knows what a Googler is. Like you meet someone who works at Google. Like you'll know because they'll tell you very, very quickly. Now, if you meet someone from Iron Man, if you meet someone who's run Iron Man,
right,
you'll know about it very quickly. Mm-hmm. These are ones where, you know, it doesn't have to match your culture, but they've done a great job with culture and they've done a great job with hiring to match that culture. I guess we've done the same.
So what is your hiring secret?
I think so. Like, we don't get into detail first. We vet personality before we vet anything else. I mean, that's not to say there's obviously a bar that applicants have to get above.
Right.
But we find that, you know, obviously you can hire two ways. You can hire someone who's an expert at a role, or you can hire someone and know that they are going to be able to grow into that role. And the second one is just as valuable mm-hmm. as the first, but it's hard to find. I think the way you find right. that second one is based on, again, like cultural alignment, values. So do they have the same values as us? Do they have if you take like our values at the end of the day, one is that, you know, we're all extremely passionate about learning and kind of moving ourselves ahead and succeeding. So do we hire people who are like that, who can get into that role? So we tend to interview, we tend to talk to people before we really get into the detail of what they do. We don't give them any tests. We don't give them any technical stuff until we've made sure they match on the cultural side. Whereas my experience in other brands has tend to have been that we tend to look at skills first, and culture is, you know, the last thing we look at. But if they're really skilled and if they're great, well, we'll just fit them into the culture. Whereas with us, it doesn't matter how good you are. If you don't fit that culture, then we just know it's going to fail.
That's right. That's right. They might create a toxic kind of environment, or they're just not going to work really well with the team. Let's unpack that a little bit further. When you're sitting in the room with a stranger, someone you just met, how do you know that they value what you value?
So the first caveat is that we very rarely sit in the room with them. The team is, I think, 15, and we're in 7 different countries. So this adds in another challenge. So we start in Australia. The product is kind of managed from Australia, but we're in, you know, South Africa and Europe and the States and the Philippines. So unfortunately, we don't get to sit down with them, which means we have to get very good at reading people. But we have certain questions we go through. We tend to talk about family quite a lot. We tend to bring some jokes into the interview. We talk about life outside of work, what they're passionate about. I think what we're trying to find is, do they have drive in life? Because those are going to be people that fit in with us. If we make certain jokes, do they appreciate and do they respond to them? Does that work with them? And I think maybe the challenge here is that as you work with different cultures, so you work with teams mm-hmm. in the Philippines, or, you know, you work with teams in South Africa, there's obviously some big cultural differences. But I think some of those values, it doesn't matter where you come from. Like they're actually quite simple values to get alignment on. And then, you know, we want to understand why they work. You know, at the end of the day, are they working for the money? Are they working for the job? Are they working because they want to make a difference? And again, does that fit with us? So I think that conversation, it's like, it feels like having a conversation with a friend, then mm-hmm. that to us is the kind of litmus test for, like, have they passed the first piece? And then we'll go on to, you know, and then after interview, then we'll say, look, will you pass this at this part? Let's look at technical ability
yeah.
and skills at that point.
So how do you get them to wear the bear suits?
So the people we employ,
I want to know. I really want to know.
People want to do it. So the first thing anyone does when they join the company is they get to design their own bear suit.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we have a company who's in the UK, and from what I understand, it's a warehouse full of old grannies who have their own knitting machines, and basically they do completely custom suits.
Wow.
So when someone joins, the first thing they'll do is they will actually pick up like the company's like suit designer, and they'll choose all their materials. It takes about an hour to kind of design your own one. And mm-hmm. they're quite expensive. And then these guys will ship them over. And that's kind of like the inauguration. I would say that anyone we hire loves that part of the process. We don't mention mm-hmm. it in interviewing. It just obviously comes out afterwards. And then you'll find that when we do team calls, we get the whole team together to what extent we can. Once a month, you'll always have one or two of the team members, depending who's in winter, turning up in their bear suits. So we do it as a bit of fun, but like honestly, people love it. And,
yeah.
and the kind of people we hire, you know, everyone has an attitude where, yeah, they kind of like it's kind of silly, but everyone loves it.
And that is something I think that is very unique to your company. Are there any other little unique things that you all are doing that kind of, you know, just give it that flavor, that seasoning that makes it different?
Yeah, so we encourage teams to do. So team, like we're a video company and we send video messages. So team, mm-hmm. especially certain members of the team will send stupid messages. So we have like catch-all emails for the whole team. And like a head of community will just send stupid messages every Monday to every single team to kind of like get them ready for the week. Normally with her eating lunch or something. So we encourage that. Just before this call, we just booked a house down the south coast in Australia. And like we have one of our partners, our business partners coming over from the States. So the whole team and our wives and girlfriends are going away with them for the weekend, showing them a bit of Australia. So we tend to hang out quite a lot outside of work. And although we hang out as a work group, we always bring wives, partners, kids along. So it's not...
So you make it more of a family feel.
Yeah, it's not really about... Like, we'll obviously talk about work.
It's open.
It's open. It's more about each other's families and, yeah, and supporting each other. And that's something we've done from day one. We've always gone away together. To the extent now, with the global team, we fly team members to different countries and take them away with us. So, you know, we took the whole team to Edinburgh in Scotland last year.
Wow.
Yeah, we're looking at doing something else this year. And we'll always have a few, yeah, and with those bigger trips, I'll have a few days alone, and then we'll always bring partners along, and partners will always join. Again, if you work for a startup or a growing company, like, it is tough, and, you know, partners back their better halves to go on that journey. And so, you know, we're very thankful to them for that.
That's so true. When you have these really wild out there big ideas about this is what we want to do for the teams, who actually comes up with those ideas? Is that something that the leadership team comes up with, or you come up with and you're like, y'all, just bear with me. Oh, wow. That was bad. That's a bad part. just go with me on this. Or is it like your team, they're coming up with all of the ideas? Who actually initiates the fun?
A bit of everything. Like, as the leader, I do initiate a lot of it, because like the founding team, inevitably the culture will stem from you guys. So, you know, I enjoy getting away with the team and their families. Like I enjoy doing the trips. It is fun. Yeah. So I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this because Culture Book 101 says we should do it. I'm doing it because it's a lot of fun. And that's obviously who we are. All the team do chip in. You know, my CTO here loves the trips as well, so he really helps organize stuff this end. Our chief delight officer, Amy in the UK, she loves it all her, and so she tends to get more involved. So yeah, there's definitely a couple of teams who tend to stand out and help out more.
Hold on. A chief delight officer?
Yeah.
What is that?
CDO.
What is she over?
So her job is basically... is to delight customers. So to make sure that no customer is ever forgotten, and that's her role. And she, like, it's obviously, it's very important to us as a company. And so really she doesn't necessarily do, so she puts strategies in place, but then she also chases the rest of us to make sure that we're doing things correctly. So she'll run the community, but then she'll get involved with customer feedback. She'll get involved with events. You know, if we're doing podcasts, she'll obviously jump in as well, and, you know, help to share things out on social. And again, just make sure that, you know, we all like one thing we do internally is, you know, once a year, every single team member has to send videos to customers. So every single sign that we ever get, we'll send them a video and say welcome on board in person. And she makes sure that once a year, you know, the developers and the marketing team and the COO all get on and send videos to signups too, to make sure they stay connected to customers and, you know, a part of that greater community.
So I see. You set it up, and of course you're continuing to plant those seeds to ensure that, you know, you're getting good grass as you go. And it sounds like you started this, like when you started with a really good culture and a really good team and a good work environment and lots of fun. Did you ever find along the way that things, you know, were starting to get a little bit tough, and you had to turn it around?
Yeah, for sure. I think you lose sight of culture as you grow. And we at one point we grew pretty quickly. To be honest, we probably made, you know, one or two hires that weren't quite right, that we weren't quite strict on. And I think, again, it's probably down to being in a bit of a rush at the time. And so I think we kind of mucked up there, but you know, without making mistakes, you can't really learn. Mistakes are good, yeah, because you generally don't make them twice.
That's right.
Or hopefully.
Hopefully.
But you know, I think culture is one of these things where it's actually really hard to realize how important it is. Because you have it naturally, like, you know, we had it naturally and we were a very close team. We were all in the same country at the beginning. It was super easy. We then go remote and things go overseas and we try to adapt and we're going to make some mistakes there and we're going to make some muck-ups because it is suddenly a much, much different beast, different time zones, different cultural, like, inputs in different countries. Much harder to manage. I think we've got better, but like we haven't solved it yet. And it's gonna break again, you know, as we double this team, it'll break again. And then as we double that team, it'll break once more.
Right. So let me back up then. How long have you been in business with this version of the company, yep. I guess, or even total when you think about head honcho, yep. Right? And how big is your team right now?
Yeah, so I think we're 15 now. The Bonjour is 3 years old. The business before was 2 years before that. That business wasn't as big. It was kind of like just survival and kind of, I think, getting our feet together, the ropes there for a lot of time there were just the three of us on that. And then obviously this thing happened with Bonjour and this is the one that really started to grow fast. So we invested most of our time in
that.
So again, happy accident, but I think we were prepped to see when the opportunity was there and this was the big opportunity, which is what we were looking for. So just because you start a business doesn't mean you need to succeed with that one, because what it does is again, back to what I was saying before, it's all learning and mistakes. So the longer you spend in the game, the better you will get at spotting opportunities and growing and then, you know, being able to get the team on board to do that, et cetera.
It sounds like you've built in not just fun into your culture, but you have sort of a learning organization as well. Like, you care about, okay, yes, we're going to learn from mistakes. We know we're going to make mistakes. We're going to expect mistakes every once in a while. And we're not going to use it as an opportunity to blame or scapegoat people, but we're going to learn from this and we're going to grow together as a team. It sounds like that. Would you say that your culture is like that?
Yeah. Although it wasn't natural, we've had to work at that one really hard. Like it's easy to make scapegoats. Yeah. Like people do this naturally, I think.
Right.
I think you have a, right. When you first start a company, the founding team naturally risk takers. So we don't really care. We'll do whatever we want. We'll do whatever it takes to make something happen. And we'll just, you know, try loads of stuff. As you get bigger and you're hiring people who are entering a company at the next stage, they're probably more risk averse. I mean, like we're not corporate, but they want a bit more stability and they're probably not going to take as many risks. And so what you need to do actually is to get people taking risks again and say, hey, look, risks are how we learn. And what it is it's just a testing environment. So you try something. In fact, you try 10 things, 8 of them fail, 2 of them succeed. If you didn't try 10 things, you wouldn't find those 2 things that succeeded. And when those 2 things succeed, you then iterate on them and try 10 more things. And you get the two better versions yet again and again and again and again. And when you go through this process, and you get to success, like it works. It works.
Yeah.
And it's great to own that.
Yeah.
Obviously the challenge is don't invest too much time so that if you do fail, it's not a big cost. That's where the balance is. And obviously if you do hire and make mistakes there, like as we have done, like that's a pretty big cost. So
it is a big cost, but it sounds like you all are learning from those errors and trying to find ways to make sure that you're really, really thoughtful and not going in with sort of like, oh, I've got to do whatever I've got to do to survive. I need to get this person. I need a body.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a heartbeat? Okay. We're going to put you in a bear suit right now. So it sounds like you are being really thoughtful about it. And any manager who's been in the game for any number of years can tell you that they've made bad hires. Every once in a while it happens. And sometimes, you know, it's just not the best fit. It sounds like you all are definitely well on your way to having a really prosperous company as you grow. Right.
Yeah, I think one of the good lessons, this is part learned and part kind of taught, is always be looking for the next people. So, you know, we went into a big hiring push all at once and it was a bit late. Whereas now we tend to like we have people on our kind of like hit list, if you like, who we already engage and already work with, maybe do a little bit of part-time here and there with them. And yeah, the company doesn't have the revenue yet to hire them or doesn't have the spare revenue because you're investing in other areas, but we kind of flirt with them. And if you flirt them for six months, a year, 2 years, you learn more and more about them. They learn more about you. And then when you come together, there's no interview. It's just like, hey, so are we going to do this? And they're like, yeah, we're going to do that. And it's great because then, you're not rushing at the time. When you're ready. So start, everyone you meet is a potential hire, I think. With everything moving more global, if someone moves city, like, who cares? They're still potential. If someone moves country, who cares? They're still a potential hire. It doesn't really matter.
That's a really good way to look at it because, if you've been working with them for a while, you already know their work ethic. You know if they have the technical ability and you know if you can work with them, if you can stand them. So that's perfect. You're right. I like that. So do you have any other advice for leaders who may be trying to figure out how do I incorporate something different and fun into my work environment?
Yeah, I think not everything. I mean, this is especially for people hiring remote and global. You have to get people together at certain points. Not everything can be done remotely. Like I think there's a point when getting together in person has a wonderful effect, and it does help build trust and everything else, and and culture too. So don't leave it too long before you do those. And that doesn't mean you have to bring the whole company together, but you can bring teams together in cities that make sense. But on the flip side of that, like, look global. Like, it's great when you start to get people from different countries, different cultures. It's really great for culture. It really makes the team more diverse. It brings new insights into the team. It's actually makes it a lot more exciting, I think. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid to do it. And best of all, you find the right talent and you find the right cultural fit. There's no 80% there. You're in a small city. You hire this guy because he's the best guy in the city. If you look at the world, trust me, you will find your culture. Yeah, there's 8 billion, 7 billion people. You'll find your person.
That's a really good point. You'll find your tribe. They're out there somewhere.
Exactly.
Oh, that's good.
Don't compromise.
So did you ever at any point, work as a manager in a corporate environment, or have you always been sort of an entrepreneur?
Always been pretty entrepreneurial. I only really have ever had the one job, and it was just as a design consultant. So, mid-sized company, but I kind of went off and did my own thing pretty quickly, pretty early on.
Cool. Yeah.
Sorry. I've worked with corporates. I did an MBA when I moved to Australia, mostly so I could get a visa. But every single one of my classmates was a corporate, so it was great. So I have a lot of friends in that area, a lot of friends in consulting, and I love them to bits, but I would never do it.
Well, when you're working in line with your passions, you can do your best work, and if that means that you have to be overseeing the whole thing as Papa Bear, then it seems like you are definitely leading the ship and in the flow of where you need to be. So I really appreciate your time today. And I'm just curious, what is on the horizon for Bonjoro?
It's got a lot of product work. I mean, you kind of get 3 years into a company and then, you keep hitting these milestones and it's time to level up again. So with us, it's just expanding the product, probably to double the size in this year, which again is a lot more work than we've ever done. We find now that 95% of our customers are not in Australia. So they were based here. Everyone is overseas. So how do we tackle that? Mm-hmm. We have a couple of more senior hires we want to make. It's a pretty impactful hires. So we're just looking to what we can do to bring those hires forward as quickly as possible. That kind of ties in with obviously business growth. I think one of the challenges is always, there's probably 5 or 6 people I would love to have on the team right now. And it's like, well, who do we hire first? And then who second, then who third, and who fourth, and what countries are they going to be in? How do we find them?
Right.
And I'm sure that by the time we've hired those 6, then there'll be another 8 that we want to hire. So I think it's just managing that growth curve and not hiring too soon, but definitely not hiring too late, which is what most of us tend to do.
Well, Matt, is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners before we go today?
I think, think outside the box, look to the rest of the world when you start to hire, look to other cultures. Talk about remote work is becoming more and more of a thing. But if, there's plenty of Western cultures who are remote, there's Australia here, there's New Zealand, there's South Africa, there's Europe, and then there's obviously beyond there. Try it once. If you get someone overseas, it works well. There's so many benefits it brings. And the main one being that you just don't have to compromise on culture.
And what would you say is the main benefit of all of the fun that you have at work?
Well, I don't know about you. I probably work 70 hours a week. And if I wasn't enjoying it, that would be a waste of a life, I think. So, and the same with you, you know, your team, like that.
Yeah.
People shouldn't go to work just to make money to live off. They should go to work because they enjoy and feel fulfilled. And so if you make work enjoyable.
Matt, can you repeat that? Because there's like a flock of
kookaburras, which are
okay.
They call them monkey, but they're like the bird of Australia. And there's a whole a family outside the property going crazy right now. So I've actually just lost my train of thought. If you can edit it.
So let me ask you again.
they threw me.
Right, they did. Okay, so this is the Lead with Levity podcast, and I am really happy to have you on today because you sort of embody levity at work. You know, you bring the levity, you ensure that it continues to grow, it continues to be okay and supported at work, and people know that they can engage in that. There's a family feel, they can be authentic. And they can just be themselves. So my question to you is, what would you say is the main benefit of all of that wonderful levity that you have going on at work?
If you don't enjoy what you do, then it's a waste of a life. You're not going to work to make money so that you can enjoy the rest of your life. Because if you do that, you'll look back in 30 years' time and realize that most of your time has been in that office. So it's all about making the most of your life, enjoying your life, and laughter is the answer to that, I think.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you for coming on to the show.
Great to be here. I'll shut the door next time. I'll shut the door. It's actually quite quiet outside. I've got headphones on, so I don't always hear them. And then those guys just turned up and started.
Yeah. They do. They're like, oh, he's on a podcast. It's our time.
Yeah, they're pretty, they are the noisiest bird in the entire country. Beautiful though, but... Yeah, crazy.
Ah, kookaburras. I thought you were folklore. only to be heard about in the storybooks. Folks, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Matt Bonnet of Bonjouro. I definitely enjoyed it. Some of my key takeaways are that we need to make sure that we're participating as leaders. We're participating in the fun with our teams, not just leaving it as something that they should do over there, but we actually get in there and we engage so that we can show them that it's okay to have fun. We need to treat people as whole people. Your team has a life outside of work. And guess what? Now they work at home, they live at home, they work where they live, all of that. So let's treat them as whole people. I love that Matt has a chief delight officer. That is so cool. So, so cool. And some other takeaways that I have are, we need to be as thoughtful as we can and willing to make mistakes. So if you're able to make mistakes, you can innovate. But, you know, be smart about your mistakes and learn from them, grow from them. And then always look for the next best person. So don't wait until you have a vacancy. Always keep your eye out for that talent that's right there on the horizon, people who you absolutely love to work with. And they're just there. Of course, they have a job right now. But, you know, one day when you have an opening and it makes sense, you can pull them in. So thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. I hope you got something out of this. Let's work some levity in today.
Thanks for listening to the Lead with Levity podcast. Go to www.leadwithlevity.com to access show notes and other resources.